This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening, Africa. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Today we go in-depth on the new Basketball Africa League. This story and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, it is May Madness in Africa with the start of the inaugural season of the Basketball Africa League, which is an offshoot of the U.S. National Basketball Association, or NBA. The Basketball Africa League features 12 of the continent's top teams. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
26 games writing a major chapter of African sports history. That's the narrative of the inaugural season of the new Basketball Africa League, an NBA offshoot that tips off in coming days. Basketball is not, currently, the continent's favorite sport. That trophy goes to the mighty soccer, or football as it's more commonly known. But the courtly game has risen in popularity since it was introduced widely on the continent in the 1960s, siring African stars who hit American courts running, like NBA legends Hakeem Olajuwon of Nigeria, Dikembe Mutombo of the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Lol Deng of South Sudan. The 12 BAL teams are called from the best teams, many of them police and army teams, across the continent. They include West African teams like Nigeria, Cameroon, and Senegal, Southern heavyweights Angola and Mozambique, and the might of the Maghreb in the form of teams from Tunisia, Morocco, and Algeria. And, bringing a bit of musical flash and street cred to the new league, rapper J. Cole has signed on to the Rwandan team, the Patriots BC, according to local media reports. Rufiwe Seboko is a sports journalist based in Johannesburg, and although her home team, South Africa, didn't qualify for this tournament, that won't keep her from watching.
I am really, really excited about it. It's been a long time coming. I think it's a real moment of excitement for a lot of people on the continent, for a lot of, you know, basketball fans and basketball players, people who are employed by the sport. It's a big moment. It really, really is. I can't downplay how much it means for African basketball in the past and going into the future.
Seboko declined to bet on a winner, but said no matter what, viewers can expect high-energy play and big physicality from these players. VOA caught up with BAL President Amadou Galou Fall in Johannesburg before the first game. He said the decision to give Africa its own league was pretty obvious.
We have no doubt, and everybody recognizes the, you know, tremendous amount of talent that the continent has. You know, players from Africa have been having major impact, not only in the NBA, but also in the NCAA. And today, I mean, these days, we are the March Madness, the annual college basketball tournament taking place with, you know, many African players in multiple elite college rosters. So, you know, the talent has always been there.
And Seboko said this is a great way to show off Africa's excellence and keep it on home soil.
It's so incredibly important to have a league of Africans on the African continent for so many levels. We have the talent, number one. If we have the talent, let's do it. Let's get these guys the opportunities to play at home on their continent and not have to feel like they have to go outside of the continent to Europe or to the States to be successful. I think this is such an important step in just like teaching the young people who are going to be watching them that, you know, you don't have to leave home to go and make a success of yourself as an athlete.
So will the starting season reveal Africa's streaky shooters, or a torrent of threes, dunks to die for, or nothing but net? Spectators will have to see or hear for themselves. VOA Radio will simulcast the games in English and French and give play-by-play coverage in Bambara, Kinyarwanda, Wolof, and Portuguese for some games. The action starts Sunday when Rwanda's Patriots Basketball Club takes on Nigeria's Rivers Hoopers at the Kigali Arena in Kigali, Rwanda. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Staying with Basketball Africa to get a preview of the league's action, International Edition's Steve Miller spoke with VOA's Sunny Side of Sports host Sonny Young. Here's a clip of their conversation.
Yes, originally, Steve, this Basketball Africa League, their plans were a little more ambitious for a longer season, originally scheduled to tip off in March of 2020. But because of the coronavirus pandemic, it's been postponed. Opening game will be on Sunday at the Kigali Arena, and the Basketball Africa League organizers basically decided to kind of have a compressed two-week tournament to determine their first champion. And our Voice of America listeners need to understand these are club teams, some of the top club teams in Africa, not national teams. National teams will compete in the Olympic basketball tournament, but this is for club teams in Africa. And it is a very broad in terms of teams that qualified, Steve. They do come from all over the continent. Algeria, Egypt in North Africa, a team from Morocco, AS Saleh. And then you have teams from West Africa, Nigeria, Rivers Hoopers, Mali, AS Police. I would say Mali and Nigeria both have very proud pedigrees in African basketball, as does Tunisia, which also has a team represented at the Kigali Arena. I think it'll be interesting, Steve. I think it'll be good overall for the development of the sport in Africa.
Now, you mentioned that there are several teams from all over the continent, and these are club teams and not the state teams that are hopefully will be playing in the Olympics in Tokyo this summer. But, you know, what are the rosters made up of? Is it just people who are playing on these club teams? Are there opportunities for African diaspora to participate as well?
Good question, Steve. In fact, under the rules of the Basketball Africa League, eight of the players have to come from the country they're representing, and they are allowed four foreign players on the team. And as a result, there are actually a few American players sprinkled about for this two-week Basketball Africa League tournament. Some see this as an opportunity to maybe get their name out there and perhaps get picked up by a European team, or, you know, maybe even possibly an NBA team, the top league in the world, which interestingly, the NBA will be beginning their playoffs, Steve, during the second week of the Basketball Africa League tournament.
That was VOA's Sonny Young speaking to International Edition host Steve Miller. Catch the Sunny Side of Sports show on weekdays at 16:30 UTC. Also, the Voice of America is one of the broadcast partners of the Basketball Africa League and will simulcast BAL broadcasts in English and in French, and provide some play-by-play coverage as well. These broadcasts can be heard on more than 30 VOA-owned and operated FM stations in 16 different African countries, and will be available to VOA's extensive network of commercial and public radio stations across Africa. In addition, VOA Africa websites in 15 languages will carry game highlights and link to the live radio broadcasts in English and French. So there are plenty of ways for you to meet your Basketball Africa needs with VOA. Now going to South Africa, researchers report more than 133,000 people in the country may have died from COVID-19, far more than the official tally of nearly 55,000. The South African Medical Research Council has been monitoring excess deaths since May 2020, and this week said the country has seen 157,000 excess deaths in the past 12 months. It is estimated that COVID-19 caused 85% of them. This new report comes as South African doctors are warning that infection rates are again ticking upward. They also say new variants, including the B117 variant, which was first found in Britain, and the B1617 mutation, which was discovered in India, are now being found in South Africa as well. Also in South Africa, a pair of conjoined twins were separated at South Africa's Red Cross Children's Hospital recently, and they are doing well. The girls were joined at the head, which is the rarest form of conjoined twinning. That's according to Professor Tony Fagaji, who performed the operation. He spoke to reporter Vicky Stark.
Sigaji says Sipusetu and Amahle's mom is ecstatic with the results. 4 days after birth, the twins were moved from their home in the Eastern Cape province to Red Cross Children's Hospital in the Western Cape because it has a dedicated pediatric neurosurgery unit. Sigaji heads it and says it's the only one in sub-Saharan Africa. He explains their condition, craniopagus twinning.
Conjoined twins are when the fertilized egg doesn't separate and there's some physical connection, and they can be connected in different parts of the body. It may be the chest, the abdomen, the spine, the pelvis, or the head. And the head is the rarest of those forms. So in a country like South Africa, in our population, we'd see it maybe once every 15 to 20 years.
He says the team, which included anesthetists, plastic surgeons, and nurses, was well prepared, and the operation went better than expected.
Through the help of an anesthetist colleague of ours who was part of the team, he did a 3D printed mold, a model of the two skulls connected, so we could plan it in advance, both the anesthetic, because that's awkward, as well as the actual incision that we were going to do. So the whole procedure with the anesthetic time and the surgery time probably took about 4 hours. But of course, there were a couple of weeks that we spent just planning it so that it would go very smoothly.
Sigaji says the babies have returned home.
As far as I know, they're doing well, as we anticipated, that apart from the wound healing, that they would go on to develop normally. We're not anticipating that they would run into any trouble.
Sigaji says they are due to see them in a couple of weeks for a checkup. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
The U.S. State Department says it's deeply concerned about increasing political and ethnic polarization in Ethiopia. Today's statement came a day after the U.S. Special Envoy for the Horn of Africa returned from his first trip to the region since taking office. The State Department says Ambassador Jeffrey Feltman underscored to Eritrean President Isaias Afwerki that his troops must withdraw from Ethiopia's Tigray region immediately. The statement also said the Horn of Africa confronts several crises and that decisions in the coming months will be significant for the region and U.S. interests. It said Washington is committed to addressing the crises and to supporting a prosperous and stable region. It went on to say that, quote, the atrocities being perpetrated in Tigray and the scale of the humanitarian emergency are unacceptable, end quote. Ethiopian federal troops launched an assault in the Tigray region in November, saying it was in response to attacks by the Tigray People's Liberation Front on military bases. While the government says it has focused on the TPLF leadership, there are multiple reports of attacks on civilians, and humanitarian groups say the region faces growing hunger because they are not allowed full access. Eritrean troops have been operating in the region despite Ethiopian government pledges that they would withdraw. The Ethiopian government has variously denied and admitted that its troops have committed abuses in Tigray. The Eritrean government has denied all allegations against its forces, including allegations of sexual violence, but says anyone responsible for sexual violence should be punished. When most people think of poaching, they probably think of elephants or rhinoceros, but another more humble animal is also a victim of poaching, and that is the donkey. Donkeys are sometimes poached for allegedly magic potions. This happens in several countries in Africa, particularly in Kenya. And to discourage donkey poachers, Kenya last year banned donkey slaughterhouses and recently held its first donkey festival to encourage their protection. Victoria Amunga reports from Nairobi.
In Magadi, Kenya, donkey keepers are celebrating their animals at a special festival. The donkey, they say, is the workforce for their community. Pilores Maberi, a resident of Magadi, has been keeping donkeys for a year now. She says, a donkey is Maasai people's car. We carry heavy load in Magadi. We go to sell, feed our children, carry water. The donkey has a lot of work at home. Thousands of donkeys, many of them stolen, were slaughtered here to be used in allegedly magic potions sold in China until the Kenyan government banned donkey abattoirs in February of last year. Residents like Pilores say they can now keep their donkeys without fear. She says, I say we are okay. They are not stealing our donkeys. Those who don't have, we buy for them. We tell people to buy donkeys because there is no more slaughtering. The chairman of Donkey Owners Association in Magadi, Jackson Kupere, says the number of donkeys is climbing again after so many were lost to the slaughterhouses. He says donkeys were finished, but they have stopped selling the donkeys for slaughter. Now the donkeys are increasing. If you do the math, the donkeys were just about 100 to 200 in this whole community, but now they have increased to about 1,000. They have increased a lot. Leaders in this community are teaching residents how to protect their donkeys from thieves. Daniel Lenkoi is the Magadi area senior chief.
We are meeting with the stakeholders, chiefs, village elders, and other opinion leaders, so that we as a community, we avoid selling of donkeys and even slaughtering of donkeys.
Animal welfare organizations in Africa are partnering with donkey keepers on how to be vigilant against donkey abductions. Josiah Ojuang, the program coordinator for Africa Network for Animal Welfare, tells us how.
We are working with them so that they are able to form scouts. We can call them community scouts that are able to track and keep monitoring the donkey movement on a daily basis and also report incidents of donkey thefts to the authorities. So it is a program known as community capacity building for resilience on donkey welfare.
The donkey population in Kenya dropped from 1.8 million to 1.6 million, according to a survey by the Kenya Agriculture and Livestock Research Organization in 2019. With protection measures in place, donkey keepers hope to restore the animal numbers soon. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Now we go to South Sudan, where an aid worker with the organization Cord Aid was killed and a driver injured in the country's eastern Equatoria state when gunmen ambushed their humanitarian convoy. Reporter Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba that the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs and the South Sudan NGO Forum condemned the attack, which occurred Wednesday. Cord Aid says a female staff member was fatally shot while on duty in an area between Chukudum and Camp 15 in Budi County. She later died from her injuries. Cord Aid said she was a specialist in reproductive health and was en route from Torit to another location to support a medical facility. Authorities have not yet identified the attackers. While the global advancement of women over the last few years cannot go unnoticed, much work remains to reach gender equality in innovation and technology. In Nigeria, the Women Technology Empowerment Center, or WTEC, is a nonprofit organization that uses innovative approaches to ensure more girls pursue technology careers. For more, Africa 54's technology correspondent Paul Ndiho via Skype spoke to Oriolua Lesi, who is the founder and executive director of WTEC in Lagos, Nigeria.
You lead an organization that empowers a lot of women in the field of science and technology. Let's start there. What do you do exactly?
Thank you so much for that question. I run a nonprofit called the Women's Technology Empowerment Center, WTEC. It's based in Lagos, Nigeria. And what we do is we equip girls and women with technology skills. So, for instance, programming, building mobile applications, website design, graphic design, robotics. And so we're really trying to get girls interested in technology and technology-related careers and supporting them as they start to pursue careers in technology.
When these young women come to you, or women in general come to you, what are their concerns? What is it they are looking for?
We work with girls in secondary school. So one of our flagship programs is our She Creates Camp, where we are working with girls between the ages of 13 to 17. And there we're helping them build technology skills, helping them to become technology creators, introducing them to role models already in the technology space. So when they come to us, I mean, they're still in school, so they're still open to learning a lot. They don't really have a lot of preconceived notions yet about, you know, oh, tech is for me or tech is not for me.
Are there some examples of success stories of women that have gone through your training who are out there doing their thing?
We've empowered just over 31,000 girls and women. So that means that these girls and women have passed through our programs, and they're now doing different things, not all of them in technology. So 86% of our alumni were inspired to work within science, technology, and engineering field after attending our program. We have close to 25% who actually went on to study a STEM-related degree or are currently working in that space. And then we have about 56% of our alumni who have been able to earn some kind of income using the skills that they got from our program.
Who inspires you?
Wow, so many people inspire me. I'm sure it's a cliche to say, you know, your mother, but that was my first role model anyway, because she was an engineer and she was doing so much. There's her, there's another lady in Nigeria, a former minister of communication technology. Her name is Dr. Mobala Johnson, and she really inspires me as well.
Why is Nigeria, especially Lagos, where you are, a very attractive place for all these tech companies?
It's a very dynamic city, and whatever is happening, you know, outside in the world, you tend to see it, you know, very quickly in Lagos, maybe more in Lagos than other parts of the country. But, I mean, there's definitely a huge talent pool here in Lagos. There's great access to technology. Also, because of technology, the internet, you really can be anywhere, especially in technology. You can live anywhere and then work, you know, remotely. Because of COVID, we're going to see, we've already started seeing more of that, you know, that, you know, jobs are no longer tied to specific locations, but they're open to people, you know, wherever they may be.
How has this COVID impacted your business? How has it impacted the industry?
Well, it's impacted the industry, definitely. I mean, last year, I think, was really the year of tech. In case anyone was in any doubts, I mean, we now know that, you know, technology is crucial for businesses, it's crucial for economies, it's crucial for healthcare, education. We saw literally every facet of our life being mediated, you know, by technology. I mean, in our organization, of course, we started working from home. We were able to seamlessly move, well, I shouldn't say seamlessly, but almost seamlessly, you know, transit to working from home. We had to move most of our programs online as well. And we found that we were able to do so much more with technology. I think for an organization whose work is centered on technology, it also made me realize that we were not even utilizing the potential of technology even to the nth degree. There was just so much more we could do. Being online opened up our programs to the world. So we were working with girls and young women across continents. Really been good in that sense.
That was Oriolua Lessi, founder and executive director of the Women's Technology Empowerment Center in Lagos, Nigeria, speaking with Africa 54's tech correspondent, Paul Ndiho. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, please visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and our editor, Paul Alexander, thank you for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America. Yehia Suhi will be back hosting this show next week. In the meantime, stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great weekend.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international